back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. It's been a busy week. A lot of the videos have been really long, so I'm going to be short. One of the things that's happened is my neighbors, you know, because I'm on a large piece of property, but I have a neighbor literally 5 feet away because they have the double wide and I'm the garage that has been turned into a three-bedroom house. But so we're very close, shared driveway and so forth, and they have some visitors. And their visitors came with a couple of bikes. And we're not talking about with, you know, pedals. We're talking about Harley-Davidsons. One gentleman is 67. And so I thought, well, you know, and the irony is his name is John. So there's two guys here, both 67, both named John. But anyway, we talked a little bit about Harley-Davidson. And I asked him a few questions because one of the things I was wondering about is, you know, the macho guy of years past, do they have him anymore? Apparently, he said there is still indeed a culture of people who are the biker. They go on the long trip. These are what they do. They go on the long, you know, 500-mile trips and whatnot on their bikes to various places. I think he said where there's a South Dakota recently and whatnot. But one of the things I was able to share with him today is because I've been the passenger on a bike in 1974, I think. I've driven a motorcycle? No, that's not me. I've actually taken a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, in a big industrial building, with one of these large hallways, you know, one of these like 15-foot wide hallways and, you know, several hundred feet long, you know, and just with other people around there. And I'm pushing this Harley-Davidson down, you know, which is kind of like, you've got a bike in the building here. But the reason is the company, Harley-Davidson, dropped it off at our place. I was working at Magnavox at the time. And they dropped it off late in the day, and I just happened to be there, so I was the one that brought it in, because the bulk of the building were doing military electronics, and us way in the back, we were doing the industrial stuff. One of the particular things we were doing is automotive ignition, and so a lot of car. I don't know about today, but the ignition system is a product of Magnavox. But the first generation that they did was not with cards, although, eventually they started doing some work with Ford. And they delivered a Mercury Zephyr, just like they delivered the Harley. They delivered a Mercury Zephyr, Ford did, for us to use. And we put an electronic ignition on it. And so this is when the distributor caps were still the norm, the mechanical distributors. And so we had this Mercury Zephyr running, and the distributor was just going around in circles doing nothing because a computer was doing it. And the person who completely on his own designed the computer software to do that was me. At that time, you know, I was early 20s. For a young guy to have that kind of responsibility was pretty neat. And of course, you know, because this was very early on. But things changed, and I was gone before they got any further on that. But when I arrived at Magnavox in 78, I think is when I arrived. 78, 79, whatever. At the time, were in production with the first generation electronic ignition for Harley-Davidson. And so I was coming up to speed with this. I was the guy replacing, I never met the person who did the first generation design. he used a processor that cost a whopping $4. And so that was way too expensive. We're trying to get the cost down and maybe add some, you know, because again, this was really, this was not a powerful processor. Ended up, did a few designs with different processors. And it was really interesting to actually see, because we had an engine mounted in a rack. And to see the engine run with my software was kind of like, wow. You know, it really was strange. Because again, at that time, basically all the cars and motorcycles had mechanical distributors, which was by itself, that time, you know, the design, the mechanical design that did the mechanical advancing of when the spark occurs, doing it mechanically was really serious engineering. It was remarkable stuff. And the reality is, it's much easier to do it in software. But the issue is, we didn't have the power that we had today, you know, because today a cheap processor will do, you know, run at a gigahertz clock rate, or at least 700 megahertz for, you know, the embedded machines. But, you know, typically gigahertz and whatnot. So you're doing a whole lot of stuff. And you're 32-bit, 64-bit computers. And they literally only cost a couple dollars, if that. But we did a 8-bit computer that was running about 100,000 instructions a second. So we're not going that fast. So one of the things was, we have to be efficient and things of that nature. So as I described, this processor was working its little bits off because it was busy to do this. And back at that time, these were called mask programmable. In other words, when the processor chip was actually made in the factory, unlike today, a processor has, you know, typically what's called flash memory, which is programmable, that so you can put a program in and then change it. Whereas back then it was mass programmable, meaning it was put in at the time the processor was made and you don't change it. That's it. It never changes. So if you got it wrong, the only way to fix it is to replace it. This was for about 10-20 years, that was the norm. It's not the norm anymore. But so at the time, you would get the program, get it right, and then, you know, have a prototype done. You would have a few chips made and then test to make sure you had it right, and then it went into production. So, you know, again, to have this young guy have the responsibility of doing this. So we went from a $4 computer to a $2 computer. And one of the things I realized is that in doing that, saving $2, because we were making, I think it was 60,000 units a year were being manufactured. And I realized that, you know, 1 year, and it basically paid my entire salary, because I was only making 15,000, I think. $15,000 a year there. Because since I didn't have a degree, I was a technician rather than an engineer. So I was paid less. But I was the guy who did this completely. So by saving the $2, I paid my salary and then some. But we got to the point, it was working and so forth. You know, we there was one guy there who worked. He was, I forget what he did, but anyway. But he was also a person who would enjoy riding a bike. So he took our bike and would ride it home. You know, so he was riding, with our prototype. But then we went to National Semiconductor, and because of some issues, I actually flew out to California to National Semiconductor, delivered the software, and then signed off on it. So I got a trip out to California out of the deal. But then some weeks later, they delivered what's called first silicon. And I think it was 4 units that they delivered to us. We put a couple on some motorcycles, one for us, one or two that was actually sent to Harley to validate things and whatnot. And then signed off, said, yes, we're fine. It went in production. So that saw for, I don't know how long, but at least for 2 years. So over 100,000 motorcycles were produced with that software. But the issue is, first silicon, I have one. You know, because the thing that's fascinating about this, you know, normally you get a chip like this, and, you know, the production model was the plastic package, but this is a ceramic. There's no marking on it. On the bottom, there's NLD, whatever it stands for. I don't know. It may be simply, you know, the particular, just to identify from the next one. But so this, there's no date codes or whatnot, no part number or whatnot on it, because this again was first silicon. And again, this is basically not done anymore because it's done because it's flashed. This is a mask programmed device. And like I say, well over 100,000 of these were manufactured. The program cannot be changed. And there are a whole bunch, or at least were, a whole bunch of Harley-Davidson motorcycles with this processor on it. Well, you know, a clone of this. And what fascinates me is, so my neighbors have come by and they have their bikes and whatnot. And I was able to share with them because, I mean, they're into Harleys. I mean, the t-shirts, the various... stuff that they have, they're into Harleys. I mean, so I was able to say, you know, no, I don't ride a bike, but I have a connection to Harley. You know, anyway, because, you know, I actually have a patent because I was there at the time they were doing two-cylinder engines and we developed a prototype four-cylinder engine. And I developed a technique to make it real simple. Anyway, I won't go into the details. But we got a patent on it. I mean, to me, I thought it was silly. But got a patent on it. So I have my name on a patent. But that's silliness. You know, it's long expired, too. But anyway. It was kind of neat. Because a little distraction, a little bit of memory. And the thing that was fascinating is, who cares about this anymore? I can't relate to anybody. You know, by the way, in the program, it had, I don't know, I think it was like a kilobyte of program storage. Not a very much, you know, it didn't have much storage. But I had, because the... It may have been less than that, maybe only 512 bytes or whatever. It's fairly, very, very small. But the program was very, very small because it's just doing basically a simple loop, you know, to saying, oh, well, the engine's going this fast. Let me charge the coil and now turn it off so the spark happens to generate the spark. Doing it over and over and over and over again. But anyway, there was extra room. And it's kind of like, I'm not going to leave it empty. So in the processor, you know, at the time, what kind of, I couldn't think of, you know, being in telecommunications, one of the common expressions to test way back when was to write, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog's back. Because that expression, or the lazy dog, that expression has all 26 letters in it. And so that was a common thing to do because you would test like mechanical teletype machines and whatnot. So you get up testing all the letters because, you know, which obviously not really relevant today, but it was very relevant back, you know, many years ago. So this thing has The quick ceramic microprocessor jumped to the next instruction, actually written in the code in here. You know, this silliness, you know, silly guys. But anyway, so this is what I did. And, you know, there was some innovation in the program. But again, the issue is, who cares? I've never been able to share with anyone. This is, 40 years ago. And I've never been able to share the technology, the neat things that were done. Even with the people at Magnavox when I was doing this. Because they weren't software people. I was the only computer guy there. And it's... But I did this. And it reminded me, so I'll leave you the link, because years ago, 2018, years ago, I did a video specifically designed for my family. A bit of my history, you cannot serve God and money. Because I did try to tell a little bit of my history, including this, but that was just mentioned. But it was more in reference to some of the other things I did in the gaming industry with Ray Kassar. I spent some time with that. Because this was high profile. Then in the hosiery industry, especially when we're doing the European travel and whatnot. So I discussed a lot because there was a time when I was making a lot of money and dealing with a lot of people of power. And then, of course, I've hit bottom really hard. And I described that. But one of the conclusions I gave was the idea that you cannot serve God and money. And the thing that's important about that is there is the passage in Matthew 6. No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one or love the other. You'll be devoted to one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And the term there is God or mammon or mammonos in the Greek, whatever. You know, because it's often described as wealth. And you see it in the Matthew 6 once. The only other place you see it is Luke 16, and you see it there three times. This is the passage. And because the passage, the pertinent verse there is, no servant can serve two masters, for either you will hate the one or love the other. He will be devoted to the one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So it's basically identical. But then the context is different than the Matthew. Radically different. Because this is the dishonest manager, which I've dwelled on in depth previously. Because if you look at that particular parable and the related ones, I think you will find that it's very applicable to religious leadership of the day and of today. Because, you know, one who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. One who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful with the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches? And you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? This is, you know, talking basically from a righteous perspective. But what's fascinating, when you go back a few verses, the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of the light. I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, you may be received into the eternal dwellings. You know, and then one who's faithful in very little, and so forth. And you know, it's easy to say, oh, is it saying that I need to use the world's wealth to prepare me, get me in a good position, and all those kind of things? No, it's not. Make for yourself friends by means of unrighteous wealth, mammon. And so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. We're talking about hell. We're not talking about heaven. We're talking about hell. And it's kind of like you're part of the club. It's the Proverbs 1 idea, the common purse. It is, I would suggest, if you read it, you can see it quite clearly. This is not a good thing. And so when you see the idea of the master commended the dishonest manager, or praised, you think, oh, I am saying you've done well. I'm acknowledging that you've done well. Yes, he is acknowledging he's done well, but not for the master, because the master was he stole from his master. And the master's saying, oh, you did really well. You stole from me. Well done. That's not reasonable. That doesn't make sense. He's saying you've done well within your crowd, because he goes to his master's debtors, and reduces their debt. And the analogy I gave, it's religious leaders going to basically going to the non-elect and saying, oh, you're fine. I'm going to reduce your debt. You're not really sinning. It's those who reduce the impact of sin, or, in the same way, because we do have the idea of, Jesus talks about whoever lessens one of the laws, it would be called least in the kingdom of God, kind of thing. I won't find that. Won't look for that right now. But I would suggest you look at the context, very applicable for religious leaders, especially the ones that are saying, hey, don't worry about that sin. That doesn't really matter. And I'm going to cut your sin in half. And when you do that for the non-elect, because you're making for yourself friends to be welcomed into hell. So this is not a good thing. Anyway, I just said I was going to be short, but of course the other case again is the Matthew, which is different context. But I do suggest, this is the lay up treasures, do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, which where moth and rust will destroy, where thieves are breaking and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where the thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body is full of darkness. And if then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. So that's kind of the preface to it. And I would suggest it's consistent with the Luke 16 in the sense that my master is the Lord Jesus Christ, not the one who's given me earthly riches, not the one who gets me into a club and it's the sinner's club. Yeah, we can sin because we can say we're part of the club. And then, of course, if your eye is healthy, what is your eye? Seeing the light. Jesus, of course, is the light. We're called to reflect the light. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if we're not seeing his light, enough. I'm leaving you the link to that, there's the picture of the Harley. I mean, my. There was a beauty in this because the previous generation, I looked at the program and it was complicated. The program in here is simple. I would suggest the beauty of Shofar Nexus is the object model. It is remarkably simple. If there's anything I can point to with, I don't want to use the word pride, but appreciation for the Lord's grantings, the insight to be able to do this, it is that simple model. Because you know, now that I think of it, I don't know if I've seen it anywhere else. Because the typical thing is the database idea. And I don't use databases at all. I use a tree. Because you can, you know, I do use the example from a, you know, God makes trees, and from the trees, man makes tables. It's the same thing as true. Computers are naturally tree-based, and man has made, made tables, databases from it. I don't use them because I use the trees. But anyway, I won't go into that because I was going to be short. I had a moment of joy to be able to share with somebody who has a vague idea of what a Harley-Davidson is. And I had an impact on this corporation. Because again, 100,000 plus of these were made. You know, so in a sense, I'm published. You know, 100,000 copies of my what I wrote was made. Anyway, and a whole lot of miles. It's like, you know, millions of socks have been made from software I did and hardware. You know, and of course the image that I use in the bit of my history thing, that it's a card from sock knitting machine. Again, and millions of socks were made with those cards. There is some pictures of New York Stock Exchange in that video because it showed the stock exchange at the time in the early 90s. Again, I was literally on the floor and it looked like that photo. I mean, very much looked like that photo. And like I say, I was there. And even to the point that in that photo, I got to put that photo in there. In that photo, the point of the floor that you see, I literally stood there. So anyway, which is the common place where you see. Anyway, it's not. It's so radically changed today, but it's still. It is the symbol of wealth. And okay, the last point is obviously the Matthew 6. I have engaged a couple of years ago, at least, with Jim Cross in reference to you cannot serve God and wealth or money. And his response was you have to be practical or pragmatic and whatnot. You know, and I'm sorry, going to Jesus and say, Jesus, well, that was a quaint saying, but you got to be practical. No, you got to trust him. You got to trust him. I'm under serious stress. I have pondered because the only audience that I get of any numbers is when I do a video. And do a video basically saying, I'm looking for someone who's interested in doing software, who has a mind, a backbone, and knows how to love. Because, I mean, the idea is to say that if you want to go into software, you know, get credentials and whatnot, get a degree and things of the nature, and you can get a high-paying job and live a useless life. Or you can become an engineer and apply your mind to something. Again, the distraction of artificial intelligence, it's a distraction. It's huge. Whereas the idea of any, I won't go into that. I did this, my lady, I did this long before I met my wife. And I still love my wife. My lady, I love you and I want you back.